He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Hello to our listeners for this week's show of Car Keys with Jada Markin and Robin Leach. I want to talk about used car purchases and sales, which we have talked about off and on other versions of this show. But it's still, as my co-host Jada Markin believes, and so do I, it is really a good, even great way to buy a car that can be and offer a buyer, user, the feeling of a new car in many cases, if it's purchased at the right, in the right locations and knows what they're looking for. And I start with a friend of mine who had arrived where I am in Massachusetts in a 2018 A4 all road Audi. Now, a couple things about this Audi. It is a dark green with a camel interior. That is a vehicle. I have never seen that color coded vehicle in any Audi that I know of in recent memory. we'll get more to that maybe more in a minute. The other thing is it is fully loaded. I could not figure out or find anything that was possibly alternatively available in the Audi lineup of options in if you were to dealer order a vehicle that this car didn't have, except maybe Audi rings, which may not have been available in 2018 yet in the Audi lineup. But in any event, this owner purchased a set of Audi rings, dealer parts, $200 it cost, and he installed them himself. And Audi rings are one of the visual things that Audi offers owners of Audis, similar to the front Audi rings front ends, and many manufacturers are doing that, incidentally, offering lighted front and rear end monitors of their vehicle makes. But he put them in, and that completed his feeling of the lineup. But he
Hold on for a second.
Go ahead.
What? Explain to me again what Audi rings is or are.
Audi rings are a light up of the Audi rings. When you open the doors, front doors of an Audi, they light up the ground below so that you know you're stepping into an Audi, of course.
Oh, great. When you're drunk, I guess it's useful to know.
Well, it lights your up your car. So you put your feet in the right place, Jay. Yes.
Okay.
In any event, that is something that Audi has offered, but it's an extra on an order sheet. It doesn't come standard on many cars at the dealerships unless they're part of special packages. But beyond that, this car had 76,000 miles on it. It was bought in California located at a Porsche dealer in California, indicating that possibly it had been traded in by its buyer, an original owner, for a Porsche. I don't know the model, so it's irrelevant. It makes me wonder what he got as a trade-in value against whatever Porsche he built. Since this was a car that retails in the sticker for $74,000 and he got it for $20,700 with 77,000 miles on it. It looks absolutely perfectly new. But what it has, which I didn't know was available in Audis in 2018 in the U.S., heated rear seats came with this car, along with cooled front and heated front seats. And it has something that I'm going to try to see whether the current level of Audis that we own, which are 2021s, can do, because I'd never even had a clue. And it has a multi-light option for the interior lighting. Red, blue, green, yellow, blah, blah, blah. And it just was sort of an interesting thing that nobody's told us whether it's in our two Audis, one of which is an A5 Cabriolet and the other is which is a Q5. Both bought certified pre-owned used vehicles.
Sounds to me like you're ready to upgrade.
I'm not ready to upgrade to this car, but what this owner has done is he bought for something like in the neighborhood of $1,000, a package approved by Audi, apparently, for churning the 245 horsepower rating of the vehicle. It's a four-cylinder, turbocharged vehicle to 330 horsepower with a chip upgrade, which he did himself. He bought the chip, I guess, and it's controllable or adjustable by his phone.
Yeah, it's a software download is basically what it is. Yeah.
What is it? Yeah. Yeah. And it has turned this car into a rocket, comparable to what the four-cylinder might do for this car at acceleration.
It's interesting that you mentioned that. There are a number of tuners that offer these power upgrades that are downloadable. You know, it's a software. It's basically changing the software on your engine.
Yeah.
And yes, it is surprising, and I've talked to dealers about that. Some manufacturers will use that as an excuse not to honor warranties. Others will. There are different levels of power upgrades. Usually the first one is the most reasonable one is the one that makes sense. When you get into more powerful upgrades, you usually there's a trade-off, like there's the power comes more abruptly, or you know, the engine's getting too powerful for the transmission and you have risks of reliability. But oftentimes, like for my Touareg, my diesel Touareg, those power upgrades are available, and they usually run like $500 or $600.
Yeah,
and there's some reputable brands, some you know unknown brands, and but basically they offer power outputs that are available in other models of those of cars that those engines are in. Like if you take that power unit in the Audi Allroad, for instance, it basically Volkswagen and Audi use that engine in a bunch of other vehicles.
Sure,
and some
do.
Of them and some of them are more specific sports vehicles.
Yeah.
with higher outputs. So it's a pretty safe thing to do. My Volkswagen dealer used to have my Volkswagen dealer drove BMWs and Audis, interestingly, and he had an A4 an Allroad with a power upgrade.
Yeah, well, this was pretty impressive. The shifting pattern changed a little bit as well. Probably different rev situations where it changes its gearing. Is an automatic, there's no other than there is a manual override. It did not have paddle shifters on the steering wheel, but it does have. You can horizontally change the shift lever, which comes out of the center of the floor, unlike the new cars, which are now rotary dials on a lot of cars, Jay, which I don't think I like at all, so you can go from what I guess would be the auto mode to an M mode, a manual mode, or maybe it's a sport mode, and then you can shift it manually by pushing the gear lever forward or backward, obviously shifting
all
up
right.
down the gears.
Let's move on from Audi.
Let's move on. Okay, I think your comment about other manufacturers offering it is very interesting as well, because I didn't never really think about that. I'm sort of wondering whether I could do my 2001 A8 that way, but it may not have the technical capability
Those upgrades are really, they're only worthwhile pretty much on turbocharged engines.
Yeah.
Where you're going to get significant, you know, they basically increase the boost, the turbo boost, and that's right. How you get a whopping more powerful engines.
The check engine light hasn't come on, so it's obviously it's accepted the situation. As you say, it is manufacturer approved, apparently, and he did get it.
In a more mundane world, I drove my first Buick in a long time. Actually, since I drove, and Mike can relate to this car, the Buick
German
Regal a few
one.
Years
yeah.
ago.
Yeah.
But I drove a full size SUV, a Buick Enclave.
Yeah.
At 2000, I think it was a 19 or 20 ish. And I ran a couple hundred miles with it, and it's a pretty bland full-size SUV. It had captain chairs in the back. It had a third row seat. and it is a standard 3.6 V6, 3.6 liter V6, no turbo, with a 9-speed transmission. And I found that vehicle to be, as bland as it was, very
Pleasant.
functional, comfortable. It did everything fairly well. And it got me thinking, it's like, how can Buick have a vehicle that is this good and sell in so few numbers? Now, this is the same, it's the same vehicle that is sold as a Chevy Traverse, or very similar anyway. And which there are a lot more Traverses than there are Enclaves, but I thought to myself, this is a perfectly fine vehicle, and where does the Buick brand go from here
Where does
with
it
that?
fit? Where does it fit in our market of buyers, too? Because you are right. The sales numbers are not impressive for any of the Buick vehicles, and yet I think that there are several quite good looking as
Looking,
well as
yes.
good vehicles out there with the Buick moniker on the back.
Yeah, and so I want to bring up too the fact that I just read an article about Buick bringing back the Regal in 27, 28. It's probably a year or two away. And basically, it's a sedan, rear-wheel drive, based on the same platform that will support the Chevy Camaro, the new Chevy Camaro, and also, now, if, oh, what was it? Oh, this Cadillac CT5. And so that makes a lot of sense. But, okay, so we're bringing back sedans. And I know we just talked before the show about how you feel about getting in and out of sedans, but there it seems like there may be a market still for sedans, or is there,
Well,
a
station
return?
wagons also are coming back, right?
Right. And the Buick Regal was last seen as a wagon, right? It was, to me, comparable to an Audi A4, an Audi A6. At a fraction of the price, and based on the Opel insignia, European Opel, before GM sold off Opel to the Peugeot, which is now part of the Stellantis group. So that's how the last Regal came and went. And we see a few of them in town, and they're great cars. But so anyway, that's my take on the Buick, my little driving experience with the Buick Enclave, and where the Buick brand may or may not go. So,
I take it is built in the U.S. on the same manufacturing grounds as the Chevrolet. What do you equate to
Traverse, yeah,
the
it
Traverse?
is, yeah, it is. I don't know where, but it is. So that was my little take on the Buick. I found it interesting. What have you driven lately that might be exciting or just interesting?
Well, I did not drive this A4, but I was riding as a passenger in it, and the owner demonstrated its power capability and acceleration. And I guess I could say that that felt quite exciting as far as, putting 330 horsepower into this car that came with 245 or 50, whatever it was, mid-revel, certainly jolted its accelerative speed capability. To I said I used the word rocket in the beginning. I do not know what the 0 to 60 might be in that car, but it pressed me back quite firmly in the seat as he accelerated from probably 10 or 20 miles an hour forward with that vehicle. That was exciting to me. But other than that, I don't have the pleasure of having the ability to drive the variety of vehicles you do. So this is why I rely on your great expertise and opinions of some of the vehicles you are. But what I'm seeing in my current issue of Automotive News is all of in the future product pipeline section of this periodical is more of more gasoline powered models are coming in the 2029, 28, 29, and 30, even though I'm sure we think that the projection for electric vehicles is still on the horizon, albeit somewhat delayed.
Ready for my doom and gloom?
What?
That is the demise of the American auto industry. We're so short-term focused that yes, we're bringing back V8s and we love V8s, and yes, they're powerful, but they're nowhere near as fast or powerful as electric motors.
Correct.
that are both quieter and, again, much more powerful. So,
and the range is going up. The average range is going up to over 300 miles per charge on the electrics, which is going to do a lot to soothe some of those people like Robin Leach.
No, they're hopeless. There's no way you can convince Robin Leach of anything rational in the car world. But let's talk. Let me talk a bit about range. I got to drive again.
You did.
Another Porsche Macan this past week. Went to New York and back. Heavy traffic. I drove relatively fast. And put it this way, paid no attention to trying to save energy and consume less electricity. So drove normally. Traffic was moving fast because there was a constant flow of traffic. And you know how that goes here. The more traffic there is, the faster traffic is moving and the less police try to intercept you. It kind of makes no sense. But OK, I'm going on a tangent. Anyway, so I did New York and back and was
one charge.
I had 100% charge and a 340 plus mile range announced when I left. And that is exactly what I would have had, could have done, because when I got back, I did over 200 miles. I drove just over 200 miles and had just under 140 miles of range left. I think I looked at the battery. I had 40% of the battery charge still available.
Were you using air conditioning too?
I was using air conditioning. I was using everything you could use. And so, yes, EVs are more and more efficient, which brings me to the subject of some of them are not so efficient, like the new R2 that I've talked quite a bit about. And I keep reading about these enthusiast groups of R2 owners or R2 owner wannabes. And the consensus there is that the range of the new R2 at highway speed really drops from the over 300 miles down to around 250. Which makes sense because it's not it's a boxy vehicle, right? So you cannot expect a boxy vehicle to run at 70 or 75 miles an hour and get the same range or the same fuel consumption if it's a gas-powered vehicle than a more aerodynamic vehicle.
Okay. Your Buick Enclave was gasoline, right? That you drove.
It surely was, yes. Yeah.
Okay,
I was also surprised that car got like close to, on my trip, got about 24 miles to the gallon, which is way
good
more.
For that size car.
It is very good for that. I was quite shocked, actually.
Okay. Well, it's going to be around in the future. So, as I'm looking at the Buick rundown for the Enclave, and it's going to be here in 2030. I'll be with some redesigns and some upgraded powertrain type of situations, including the possibility of a plug-in hybrid and a regular hybrid along with the current gasoline versions of it.
So, Robin, let me ask you this. We know, and you've made the case, that hybrids are the way to go, and America seems to be agreeing with you, and we have seen manufacturers go the hybrid route.
Right.
Versus the pure electric route. How do you factor in that the new Toyota Highlander coming out, I don't know, in the next year or so, maybe at the end of this year, is a purely electric vehicle? And I did
I will say you're right. Toyota is jumping into the all-electric vehicle types of vehicles, even though they are pushing everything. I think pretty much their entire line now has got a hybrid version, either standard or available, alternative to the pure fossil fuel versions of it. But they certainly probably, you know, I think Toyota's management is very, very intelligent about what is really the ultimate direction that we're going to see electric vehicles reaching. And they just want to be ready. But until then, their advertising is all about their hybrid lineup of vehicles. And to go to another example of a person who just purchased a Sienna hybrid, which is a minivan, which not many people buy, but this woman did. She is so thrilled with her. She says, I'm going 500 plus miles a tank full in my Sienna hybrid, and I just can't believe I can do that. And it has captain's chairs in the first two rows. She got it for her dog, partly. And she's had it for about 4 months, and she just thinks it's the catch me out as far as an acceptable type of vehicle to have now. And she's never had a hybrid or electric type of vehicle before this Sienna, which is a 2026.
So interesting you talk about dogs. People who have dogs and larger dogs, have slightly vehicles. Different criteria when it comes to purchasing cars.
That's true. And
I have a friend who has three fairly large dogs and hauls them around in a Tesla Y, and admits that he's looking at another utilitarian vehicle, which I call, so you're looking for another dishwasher. And he went and test drove the Lucid Gravity and the Rivian R2. So he liked the R2 a lot, and was disappointed with the Gravity. He thought the Gravity, Lucid's SUV that looks very minivan like, I think. He thought it was made a lot of noises over uneven pavement, and attributed it maybe to the fact that it was a longer, bigger vehicle, and the structure was just not as solid as another vehicle, a shorter vehicle. I don't know.
It's not a body on frame. None of these sedan like
no, they're all unibodies.
Yes, they're all unibodies. Yes,
and to be fair, the Lucid and the R2 don't compare really. Price wise, a Lucid is $100,000. An R2 is $55,000 to $60,000. You know, so we're not talking apples to apples. But he was saying he test drove them in Manhattan, and he said when he went into the Lucid store, they said, I'm running out of time. Can I come back tomorrow? And they said, yeah, make an appointment or just call us 10 minutes before you want to come in. We'll be available. So he was kind of smiling at the fact that there was not a lot of action going on in the Lucid store.
Right.
And, Lucid is going, we know Lucid. I mean, I like the Lucid Air. There are a few here around town. I stopped at a gas station on my way to or from New York a few days ago, and was parked next to a Lucid, looked like a brand new Lucid Air, and the guy absolutely loved the car. I don't know that the Gravity is going to get that much that much interest, and the fact that the company has financial issues is not helping them, obviously.
Well, they've just hired a new business partner to support their attempts at turnaround, but aren't they backed by Middle Eastern countries?
Saudi money.
So money is there probably for them to survive these consistent discussions about its survival as a vehicle line because of the source of the money available. But I see people who love their Lucids. I also know, back to the Lucid sedan, that an older one that is owned by a friend of mine's lady friend has got a bunch of, you talked about the noises that the guy found existed in the test drive over the very smooth, I'm just kidding, New York City roads. There are a bunch of apparent dashboard types of noises coming in this woman's Lucid, which is probably 2021 or two. I don't think it's really annoying this woman, but it's audible so that she does hear it. There's been, I guess, some manufacturing issues with some of the Lucids coming off the assembly line, but that's not unnormal with new cars like this in the early stages. But so much for noise.
So here's the bigger question. In in the market shifting, in the manufacturers shifting to a model lineup of electric vehicles. I just think that the legacy manufacturers, whether US or foreign, are just struggling to integrate electric models in their lineup, right? You look at brands like Tesla or Rivian or Lucid, who sell only electric cars. Well, it's a clear, if you walk into their dealership or into their store, it's clear cut you're going out with electric car. And we've talked about this before. You go into a Chevy dealership and they're going to hide the bolts behind the parking lot. But I guess, you look at the Rivian R2 sales, they are predicting 20,000 sales for the second half of 2026, which it will put them right up there above pretty much every other model sold in the US, except for the Tesla Y and the Model 3. But it'll be right up there. So it's gonna outpace the Ionic 5. It's gonna outpace and I don't have the list of the sales numbers right in front of me, but even Cadillac has decent electric car sales and a nice lineup, but they can't sell them in any real
numbers.
numbers. And
Yeah,
I don't think,
because
as long as they have these ICE models, they're going to struggle with their EV sales. I mean, I think that somebody has to jump ship. And it's interesting to see, I know I'm going on in every direction here. It's interesting to see that Ford is coming out next year with that small compact
pickup
electric
truck.
pickup truck.
Yeah, we talked
And
about
that
it.
but that chassis is going to serve other models too. So Ford, having been in and out of the electric market, right now there's no more Ford Lightning F-150. The
Right.
Mach-E sales are abysmal. They're going to try to make a comeback, but they've lost all this time. I just don't know how they're going to do it.
Right.
Whereas I think in the GM lineup, you see Cadillac, like close to 30% of Cadillac sales are EVs, which is pretty
Good.
interesting.
Yes, it is.
And there's hope there.
I think we're about out of time. So until next week, we are Car Keys with Jay DeMarkin and Robin Leach.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.